Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Welcome into the Forum Club. I'm Bill Oram, joined by Jovan Buha and Anthony Slater. Guys, the Lakers are 10-3, best record in the NBA, best defense in the NBA. They just got done sweeping yet another road trip. They broke the Houston Rockets and ended the James Harden era. Is there anything bad to say about this team right now? Is there even yes. Is there even anything? Is there conflict?
They're boring, I would say. But good almost becomes boring at times, right? I mean, it's like, oh, well, they're up 20 on the Thunder again. Okay, well, they're going to win that one. You know, and this is sometimes the plight of the heavy favorite. You know, I dealt with it for years with the Warriors. The regular season becomes a little mundane when you just kind of are cruising. And they're winning. And at this point, they're clear favorites. And there's not a ton of drama to their results because it's like, they're going to win. They're going to be a top two seed, probably the number one seed at this point. So it's like, it's almost like a lack of drama, right? It's like, get a little bit of spice in that locker room.
You know, it almost feels like a lifetime ago they were in a close game against Chicago at home. I mean, it was only last week, but they've had some close games this season. But for the most part, this team has been as much of a juggernaut as everyone sort of initially anticipated when they went out and got Montrezl Harrell and Dennis Schroeder and Wesley Matthews. You know, the offseason was such a huge upheaval from a championship roster. It was a lot of change for a team that had been that dominant in the playoffs. And everyone kind of said this team actually got better. And there were, you know, well, what about the rim protection? What about the front court? You know, is Schroeder going to, you know, regress? You know, whatever some of those fears were. I mean, with the exception of Wesley Matthews, who has struggled to acclimate and now is dealing with some injury issues, you know, everything has exceeded expectations with these guys. I mean, really, every piece they've added has outperformed expectations. Markieff Morris, who came back on a minimum, has been a continuation of playoff Markieff Morris. I think he's been great. Talen Horton Tucker has been a little bit up and down, but, you know, he's had a big role on this team. It really just seems like, I mean, like you said, boring, but in a good way, where everything's going swimmingly. You know, LeBron and AD are happy. They're playing at their typical all-NBA level. Jovan, let's get you in here. You know, because you've been writing, you know, night in and night out about this team. What interests you about where this team is at 10-3 and atop the NBA?
Well, I've kind of taken the contrarian stance on the rim protection and kind of done a 180 myself, where it was a concern for me heading into the season. But I think from what we've seen through the first 13 games, like, this team is averaging as many blocks as they did last season. They're allowing fewer shots at the rim, you know, within 5 feet, allowing a lower percentage. So some of those rim protection concerns, I think, are overblown. You know, I think comparing Marc Gasol and Montrezl Harrell to Dwight Howard and JaVale McGee, like, yes, those, you know, the latter two are better rim protectors. But the Lakers have just been able to make up for that with playing bigger lineups with Kuz at the three or the two, you know, with just more Anthony Davis, you know, who was on a tear, you know, heading into the OKC game, had 17 blocks over his last five games. So yeah. I think they've found ways to step up. They're playing a little bit more of a conservative scheme. They're not playing the passing lanes as much. That's why their steals are down and points off turnovers are down. But they are kind of packing the paint. They have adjusted. and it's working. And even Marc Gasol, who at times over the first five, seven games, you know, looked slow, it was getting beat on the pick and roll, it was getting beat to the rim. He just had four blocks against OKC, and he's looked a lot better and more comfortable defensively. So to me, I thought the one concern that this roster had was, how are they going to protect the rim with Marc Gasol and Montrezl Harrell? And so far, they've protected the rim better than last season. And it's early. That can change. And the schedule's about to get harder. They have a tough rest of the month. But I do think that, you know, kind of the one perceived weakness with this roster has not really bore itself out through the first 13 games.
You mentioned the schedule. If we look at their last, Spurs three times, Memphis twice, so there's five games, Bulls, Rockets twice, Thunder. That's their last like 10 games that were against probably non-playoff teams.
Yeah.
And that's part of just like the inability to watch the game and be like, ooh, like how does this matchup line up? Now, they got the Pelicans, which are mildly interesting coming up. Warriors, which we might want to get into later in the podcast. That'll be kind of a fun MLK Day matchup. And then the Bucks, you know, who have been the best team in the Eastern Conference. They're going with two Milwaukee. So I think I want to see really from the other side. I want to see Milwaukee tested by the Lakers. I want to see the Warriors tested by the Lakers. That's what they become. But it's tough to turn them on, flip them on when it's like, you know, hey, they're beating the Thunder. So boring. The Spurs three times. And it's almost tough to judge too, because I remember the last time we got together for a podcast, we were discussing them closing against Portland, like a team that they might close with again in the playoffs, and like how Harrell fits that matchup. And the problem is, we know they're a dominant regular season team. I'm just very curious about specific matchups, and we just haven't got any of those matchups lately, but we are getting some of those coming up.
And listen, it was last December that the Lakers started the year like 23-3 or something like that, whatever their huge record to start the year was. And then they went on that East Coast road trip right before Christmas, and they lost a game at Indiana. Then they lost at Milwaukee, and really in convincing fashion, they lost to the Bucks. And then they came home and lost to the Clippers. I think it was a little bit of a reset of expectations of the season, because the Lakers had been riding such a high, but, you know, really hadn't played, you know, the top teams in the league yet. And that's kind of where they are right now, where the tests that are coming up that you just went through are going to be, you know, the biggest tests that they've seen this season, with the exception of opening night against the Clippers. So we're going to learn more about them. I think some of this conflict that we're kind of thirsting for, some of this intrigue is right around the corner, frankly.
Yeah, for sure. Jovan, reading some of your stuff on the defense lately, it is very interesting. Like, that was one of the concerns going into the season, right, was the defensive letdown just emotionally. But they're the top. They have the top rating in the league. I think 104.4 right now. I don't know what they finished exactly number wise last year. I think they're third in the league. I don't know what the metric was.
It was like 106, I believe.
I have it here. Yeah, they're 106.1, third in the league.
Yeah, so they're better. Even really with, like, would you say Davis has not like had a great defensive season? I mean, he's still himself. He's had some highlight games, but he's not at his top peak. You know, defensive level. And LeBron, we could probably get into a discussion. LeBron might be the MVP favorite through 10, 12, 13 games, which is kind of interesting.
And all career lows, by the way. Like, everything's all the way down. Like, his points are down. His assists are down by three from last year. But, yeah, I mean, absolutely.
Yeah, I think, and that can lead into a wider league-wide discussion. I think some of that is the fact that the league is just not swimming in contenders right now around the Lakers. And there's not a bunch of, like, you know, we thought Luka was going to make a leap, right? He's been kind of disappointing. You go around the league, there's just not that much stuff going on besides COVID issues and a blockbuster trade. And then suddenly the Lakers, who really haven't been affected much by this COVID stuff, have played 13 games, look very stabilized, best defense in basketball. And it's just like, it almost feels foregone at this point that, yeah, they're just going to kind of rumble through the league.
I do want to come back to COVID in a second, but let's put a pin in that part, because I think that's an important discussion with this team. But, you know, it was interesting because I did a mailbag that's on The Athletic that you guys can read, and it was shocking to me the number of questions that I got about the Lakers defense. The number of people who said, it really seems to me like the Lakers swapped out defense for offense this offseason, and I'm concerned about Montrezl Harrell's defense, and what are we going to do about the rim protection? And I think that fans are stuck on what we were saying before the season, before we'd seen it, which was, on paper, this is where they have a hole. But Frank Vogel will attempt to scheme his way around that. And so far, they've been really successful at it. And by the way, with Montrezl Harrell, who's not a perfect defender, can be a very impulsive defender, you know, but he's going to compete on that end, and he's going to, you know, draw charges and all that. Like, you take the imperfections of Montrezl Harrell as a defender because you do have Marc Gasol to defend, you know, a guy like Nikola Jokic, and because you do have an alternate small ball center in Markieff Morris, who won you games in the playoffs last year. So right now, I think questions about the defense and any concern about the defense are just surface level takes where people are not seeing what the Lakers are actually doing on the floor.
And one thing I spoke about on the postgame edition of the podcast was someone asked me, is Marc Gasol underrated with everything he brings because he doesn't really fill up the box score? And I think with Mark, and I've written about this a little bit too, like his mistakes are so egregious that it sometimes looks worse than it is. But like, you know, getting scored on is getting scored on. 2 points is 2 points. But with Mark versus, you know, maybe JaVale or Dwight would contest the shot and, it, you know, the person would score over them. But with Mark, it's like he gets blown by and they get a layup and it looks worse. You know, he's not there in the same way Dwight or JaVale is, but their defensive rating has been really good with him. I think he's second in the team in terms of on-off summary behind LeBron. So, like, it has worked with Marc Gasol. You know, those two, I believe, are currently the best two-man tandem in the NBA right now, net rating-wise. So, like, that pairing has worked. Marc has fit in with the starters. And again, I get that sometimes he'll have a egregious, you know, blown coverage or someone will score on him and it'll look bad. But for the most part, he's in the right spots defensively. And the Lakers have schemed it where he doesn't have to do as much as Dwight and JaVale had to. And they're putting him closer to the rim, closer to the paint, and playing to his strengths. So I think he clearly can't play against five out teams. Like he struggled against the Clippers and Ibaka. He struggled when teams have downside. You know, the Spurs matchup was tough for him when LaMarcus Aldridge went off. So I think there will be times where he probably has to come off the bench or just not play as much. But for the most part, I think he's fine against, you know, traditional bigs.
Hey, JaVale McGee never made a defensive error. Okay. This guy positionally was always on time. No. I mean, the funny thing is, if you think about the Lakers in the playoffs, was JaVale McGee was basically played out of every series. And Dwight Howard mattered in one series, right? Yep. The Nuggets series. And guess what? Marc Gasol matters in the Nuggets series, right? He'll just plug that, you know, it's a different type. He won't be the irritant that Dwight was. He won't be saying those corny, like, I'm the Batman jokes at Jokic. But he's probably, I mean, I would say he's a better post defender. Now, Dwight's more high energy. But yeah, it's not, yes, the rim protection and the center mix they had last year was, like you said, like more highlights, like, oh, JaVale came over and like swatted that into the first row. Dwight Howard is just like doing crazy stuff out there. But Marc Gasol will certainly be as impactful in a playoffs if he's healthy as Dwight Howard.
It's all an optical illusion, right? Like, you know, we think of big man defense as exactly what you described, you know, blocking shots out of bounds. And there's certainly a psychological advantage that gives you. But like Jovan said, preventing someone from scoring 2 points is preventing 2 points. And no matter how you do it, if it's by moving your feet and not letting someone, you know, and not letting someone get a clean look at the rim or continuing to forcing them under the basket, whatever it is, you know, all the many things that Marc Gasol does with his defensive acumen, if the result is the same, it's going to show up in, you know, all the metrics that we all judge defenses by, you know, your defensive efficiency. And so I think that it really is just people wanting to see, you know, those block shots as a measure of good defense. When, you know, Jovan, listen, I watched the game. I, you know, thought I poured over the box score. I didn't know Marc Gasol had 4 blocks last night. You know why? Because none of them went into the 12th row. Like, you know, they just don't look the same, but they are every bit as effective.
They're like tip blocks as the guy's like bringing the ball up, like that kind of stuff.
Here's a stat for you. Marc Gasol averaging 1.6 blocks a game. JaVale McGee last year, 1.4. Dwight, 1.1. So he's averaging more blocks than either of those two. Again, it's not like necessarily a apples to apples comparison, but Marc Gasol is protecting the rim.
Yeah, my only concern on Gasol is like the 3-point shot and like the willingness, you know, that's just kind of left him in his later stages of his career. And that was the problem for Toronto in the playoffs. That's why Ibaka started playing way over him. But as a defender, I mean, the brain's there. And if the body's healthy, like he'll be a positive level defender in the right matchups. And then the other thing is Frank Vogel has shown he's super adjustable in the playoffs. Like, you know, if they play a team that no center should be on the floor, I think he's proven that he won't put a center on the floor. Yep. So that's the big thing. They're just deep. They're just so deep compared to a lot of these other teams. And that's, I mean, beyond the fact that they have the best top 1-2 in the league. Remember last year, Jovan, I know you remember this, going into the playoffs, it was like, well, they're not as deep as the Clippers. I think if we looked at them against the Clippers now, you'd probably say they have a better 1-2 and they're probably deeper.
Yeah. I would agree.
Although Nicholas Batum. You
know, I mean, that's the thing that the Lakers achieved in the offseason is they kept so much of their depth, right? Like Alex Caruso obviously returned. You elevate Talen Horton-Tucker. And then you put in other guys like, you know, Wes Matthews, Markieff Morris comes back. You bring in Montrezl Harrell. It's like they are so much deeper than they were a year ago. When like going into the bubble last year, you're like, well, I guess maybe J.R. Smith is going to play some minutes. Like this rotation is jam packed. Like it's completely full of guys who should be playing bigger minutes than they are.
Wes Matthews up to 41% from three. I'm just going down some of the stats right now that are surprising me. Didn't he have like a 6 of 6 tonight? You see Danny Green hit 9 threes the other night in Philadelphia. It stunned me. I think he was like one away from a Sixers franchise record.
I saw that he was like 2 for 17 or something on the game when the Sixers only played 7 guys.
He's being very Danny Green like the entire season, you know, the up and down. Caldwell Pope, 53% from three. I mean, it's only 17 of 32, but I don't know.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
What else about this team, I mean, sticks out to you guys right now?
I'm curious for your guys' take on this because I went into depth about this for probably about 10 minutes or so, discussing a potential Lakers-Nets finals and what that matchup would look like. And we don't know what's going on with Kyrie Irving and when he's going to be back, if he's going to be back. But I'm curious your guys' initial thoughts on what a hypothetical Lakers-Nets finals would look like. And, you know, both teams can make moves. I wouldn't be surprised if either team makes another move or two to kind of tweak the back end of the rotation. But I guess as currently constructed, how do you guys view that matchup?
You know, obviously, I think we're going to need like a 20-game net sample to get a feel for what that's going to look like. But I mean, the obvious problem is their defense. You know, I mean, we're talking about a defense that will include James Harden, Kyrie Irving against the best defense in basketball right now with the Lakers. Durant has made the East very interesting because Kevin Durant looks like prime Kevin Durant still. And that gives the Nets basically exactly what the Lakers have in LeBron. The way Durant's playing, he would go toe-to-toe with a LeBron in the series right now. But the problem is what Davis does on both ends compared to what Kyrie and, you know, Harden don't do on both ends is probably a separator. And then where I'm concerned on the trade from the Nets perspective is them giving up Jared Allen in it. I was kind of surprised by, you know, he's a lot better than DeAndre Jordan. But DeAndre Jordan kind of, you know, locker room dynamics, I guess. And Cleveland wouldn't have been part of the trade if they got Jordan. So they did it to get Jared Allen. But they don't really, that's going to be a pretty bad defensive team unless Durant is just everywhere defensively while carrying a huge offensive burden. And I don't really see that.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out who you would even put on Anthony Davis in that series. If you have a center on the floor to tie up DeAndre Jordan, and I mean, I just don't know how you even try to defend Anthony Davis if you are the Brooklyn Nets. Like that team is pretty small outside of DeAndre. And like, I mean, obviously KD is long and tall and can do a lot, but like I see Anthony Davis really having his way against KD, especially in the post. And so I'm just not sure what they would even do. And like you said, not a good defensive team. The Lakers, you know, great defensive team, going to push it in transition. I would enjoy that series. Obviously, I would like to see LeBron versus KD again, but like, I still just don't see the Lakers losing a series with the way they are built to this Brooklyn team.
Yeah. Jovan framed it correctly though, that they're not done maneuvering. You know, Brooklyn is clearly in like win now mode. I mean, they just traded every first rounder they have, and I believe that trade freed up 3 roster spots. I think they have empty roster spots, so
yeah, they have 3.
I mean, Durant, Kyrie, Harden are gonna be working the back channels with every veteran on the buyout market, right? Particularly a big man. I mean, you mentioned the way they trade Jared Allen, they're probably the prime destination for whatever big man comes available. Is that Robin Lopez or something? You know,
JaVale would be interesting,
certainly. And KD has a good relationship with JaVale because they played together with the Warriors and they were friendly, so that's a great option. The thing is, Lakers Nets start a series, probably a 5-game series, you know, maybe a sweep. They start one in May, June, July, whenever the finals is supposed to be this year. It could be very different. We could have different feelings.
We didn't prep this guy, so forgive me for going off the cuff here, but who are going to be the top targets on the buyout market later this year? Who are going to be the names that we are going to be talking about? The Lakers, Clippers, Nets, Celtics, Sixers all competing over.
Sometimes that could be surprising. The big veteran people are circling right now is PJ Tucker, right?
Right. I mean, absolutely.
With the way Houston is rebuilding and PJ Tucker's unhappy with his contract situation there. I don't think he's necessarily going to be a buyout guy because I think a team would give a first rounder to get PJ Tucker right now. Maybe, you know, late first, whatever. They give an asset. So I'm not sure he'll be buyout, but that is the blinking light of a veteran that I think is probably the one that can most help a playoff team right now. Beyond that, it's so early in the season, Jovan. I don't know. Have you looked at that market much?
Not really. Trevor Ariza is a name I've heard kind of floated out there as someone who will probably be a buyout guy at some point. Dwayne Dedmon's just sitting out there. I'm surprised. Like, I think he could help as not even necessarily a backup center, but just like a third. Like,
he'd play minutes on the Warriors, I would say. You know, like there's buzz in the Warriors fan base. Like, go get Dwayne Dedmon. He would immediately play like 15, 20 minutes at least. So yeah.
I think if you're the Lakers, like you are in a spot where if something happens to Mark or Trez, injury, be it a COVID absence, you're now down to basically one center, and we've seen the team is reluctant to play AD heavy minutes at center during the regular season. I mean, I guess you could downsize with Keefe, but they don't really have that third, you know, center eligible guy for heavy, you know, and maybe in that instance, that's where they go and get Edmund. But I think just having that guy who I think could be a backup for a lot of teams, but having him as like your third string center, like that would be an asset. But besides that, I mean, I think JaVale is going to be one of the names. And I also think that there's going to probably be a few guys that just pop out of nowhere because a team situation changes because of COVID, right? Like we've now seen multiple teams decimated by, you know, absences and losing games that they might otherwise have won. So I think there are going to be probably several teams that end up having their season altered potentially by some of this and end up going in a different direction, and maybe a guy or two pops on the buyout market that we weren't expecting. So I think with how much uncertainty there is with this season and everything going on, there could be some names that we weren't necessarily expecting.
You know, a name out there that's he probably via trade because he's helpful, but George Hill on the Thunder, you know, he's the Thunder don't want to win. They're actually winning more than they want to right now. And he is like, I think he might have led the NBA in 3-point percentage last year. And he's a solid enough guard defender, you know, veteran, and doesn't want to be on a lottery team at this stage of his career. So I would say him, PJ Tucker, Jovan mentioned a few names. Like, those are probably the biggest highlight ones. Ariza's on the Thunder, even though he's not on the Thunder right now. He's technically employed by them. So he is probably the premier buyout name. Yeah. Probably in a buyout because nobody's given up an asset for him, I don't think.
And listen, with George Hill, I mean, not only do you get George Hill, you get his entire family and everyone else that he chooses to socialize with during the pandemic. What did you guys make of his comments about basically if COVID's so bad that you can't go see your family, that they shouldn't be playing at all?
I think he's probably spoke to what a lot of players are thinking but won't say on the record. Right. I think part of why he said it on the record was what I was just mentioning. The situation he's in is like making him very whatever about the season. You know, can you imagine doing this season, which we all know has been a chore, right? It's kind of miserable for a lot of these people, a lot of people around the league, yet George Hill's doing it on a tanking team. So that, I think that leads to him being like, whatever, I'm just gonna say what I feel. Where, you know, imagine if a Laker came out and said that, everyone would be like, dude, we're trying to win a title here. Like, don't say that. But that's kind of what I thought about it.
So I said we were gonna come back to COVID, and the question I have for you guys is related to something Frank Vogel said yesterday and something that LeBron and Anthony Davis have been talking about. Frank said that the Lakers want to be the best in the league at adhering to the protocols, that is one area where they are trying to dominate this season, and that can actually be a competitive advantage in the season, right? Like, I mean, obviously staying healthy is going to be a huge part of getting through this year. Do you think there's anything to the idea that the Lakers, because the Lakers so far have had one player in the regular season miss time due to the health and safety protocols? It was Alex Caruso, who said that he had someone over at his house after Christmas, and then that person tested positive. So the league is getting decimated, and the Lakers are among the teams now the relatively few teams that have not had significant issues. And it's really early, but do you think it's possible the Lakers are better at this than other teams in the league, or have they just been lucky so far?
I think it's a combination of both, but I would point to something that LeBron said, I think Kuzma said too, that they've already been dealing with this basically since March. As, you know, people living in LA County and in California, like, we can kind of speak to, we've had stricter protocols and regulations than most other states for a while now. So I think part of it is like they are hungry to repeat, and they're talking about how important it is for them to follow the protocols and how they've kind of rallied around it. And like, you know, this is something we want to be really good at. And I think Kuzma had a line about like, you know, you don't want to let your brothers down by getting into the protocol and you know, just kind of doing something stupid that's going to cost the team. But there's also an element of like, I think being in LA and in California, like you do have a different relationship with the COVID rules where, you know, I think it's been stricter for a while, so you're kind of used to it. Whereas I think other states, other teams, you know, depending on where you are, it's not strict. My personal life, I've seen that with people I know in other states and stuff where, you know, kind of depending on what your, you know, rules and protocols are, you might view COVID and what's appropriate and not a little bit differently. So I'm sure that has kind of affected the NBA to an extent. So if you're in Florida versus California, you might have a different take on it. So I do think being in LA where, you know, LeBron said, like, we've basically been on lockdown since March, like, I think that also plays a factor in this.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirectTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
If you're in California and you're like, I want to go to a bar to watch a game. I know you're not technically supposed to be able to under the NBA rules, but even if you wanted to in San Francisco, where the Warriors haven't really had COVID issues, or LA, like you're saying, you can't. It's not open. If you want to go to one in LA or in Florida, like you said, like, maskless crowded bars are available there. Didn't the Rockets have like 4,000 fans in their arena, right? I mean, that's the number. I mean, how crazy is that to even think about in California? Like, I can't even imagine the Joe Lacob tried to do this thing where he was gonna get 9,000 fans in that they were all tested, and the city was like, no, bro, that's not happening. Whereas, yeah, like the Houston's letting fans in the arena, and that can only contribute to a looser mindset, right? When that's just how humans work. Whatever's going on around you is what you kind of become comfortable with. And so, yeah, that probably has what led to some other outbreaks. And the other thing is just like luck, right? One thing sets an entire team off. It's not like a lot of these teams have, you know, the guys that have eight people in health and safety protocols, it's not necessarily because eight people have it. It's because one or two guys got it, but the contact tracing sets guys out for a while. So, you know, at any point, one or two Lakers, one or two guys on the Warriors, one or two guys on the Blazers, where they haven't had issues, and Damian Lillard's talking a good game up there. One of those guys gets it, and was sitting on a plane next to four guys. Boom, suddenly half the team is out for a week, and they're getting games canceled. So there's luck involved, too.
Yeah, absolutely. So, guys, next week the Lakers will hit the road for seven games. It's going to be their longest road trip, at least of this first half of the season. You know, we talked about some of the spots, but you know, I'm going to be interested in seeing. You know, that is a time that strikes me as a you know, a red flag time for, you know, COVID restrictions. You know, it's what, 12 days on the road, seven different cities, seven different states, seven different hotels. You know, however many flights that is. All cold weather cities. I'm going to be really interested to see how the Lakers get through that, and your teams, you know, around the league that are, you know, on trips like that, how they are, you know, going to survive. I mean, it's a really tough time, and the league's doing what it can to get through it. Any other parting thoughts before we sign off here and turn our attention to this weekend's games for the Lakers?
On that trip, like, it's not even just about the COVID, you know, do they have an outbreak type thing. It's just like, that's going to be a depressing trip. They got to just stay in their hotels the whole time too, especially with these ramped up protocols. I mean, it's already really, you guys both know, it's already very tough to do a East Coast swing in the middle of winter to seven cities. By like city four, five, six, you're just like drained. Can you imagine doing it right now with all these cities closed down, and the fact that they're basically going to be locked in there, going hotel to arena to airplane, wearing a mask the whole time in the middle of all this, with, you know, political upheaval going on that is affecting everyone in the country. Like, that's going to be a challenge mentally for the Lakers. That I that is a really long road trip to be going on right now.
Yeah, the only thing I'd say is, you know, the Lakers would tell you probably that they have, you know, the greatest mental fortitude in the NBA because of all they've been through in the last couple of years and their survival in the bubble. But nobody's done anything like this. I mean, on this team, nobody's done anything like this upcoming trip yet in their careers, where, you know, 12 days, you know, basically can't leave your hotel room except for the games. And like you said, you can't even go get a bite to eat. So I agree. I think it's going to be real tough, real hard on them, and real, I don't know, this season in some ways, I think has the potential to be more mentally exhausting than the bubble, because at least in the bubble, those guys had a degree of confidence that they were safe, that they weren't, that, you know, they're getting tested every day. Nobody was coming in without getting, you know, multiple tests and quarantining. They're in the real world now. And I think it's going to be a real mental challenge for the entire league.
Milwaukee against the Lakers is a good start to that trip. Now, I mean, Milwaukee, I think, has the best point differential in the league. Might even be, well, it was better than the Lakers a few days ago. I don't know if it's still.
I think it's 0.3 better right now.
Yeah. I still don't trust Milwaukee necessarily in the playoffs to win the East. But as a regular season matchup, that's probably as good as it gets right now.
Yeah, especially with the way those two teams have been playing.
You got Philly on this trip, Boston on this trip. It's going to be a good one.
It's going to be interesting if they actually play all seven games on the trip, what the teams they play against look like. I mean, Boston's had, I think, three straight games canceled.
Yeah.
I think the NBA overall is up to like nine or so that have been canceled. So, like, the Warriors right now are on a three-game road trip that ends in Staples Center against the Lakers, and it's just turned into a two-game road trip because Phoenix has half their team in quarantine right now. So everything that looks, it's just like everything's so unpredictable right now. It's crazy. Although you do hear everyone in the league say, like, January will be worse than February. You know, February will be worse than March. Like, it is on an upward trajectory back to normal, we think, we hope. So, you know, I'm trying to leave the people on a positive note.
All right, guys. Well, we'll be back next week to preview that road trip. I betcha we'll talk much more in depth about the Lakers and Bucks next week. So look forward to that. In the meantime, read our stories on The Athletic. Jovan and I will be covering the Lakers this weekend from Staples Center, and obviously some post-game podcasts as well. So be sure to check those out. And thanks for all of your support. Look forward to talking to you next week.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.